If you would turn to Jeremiah 24, we'll try to get back on track. I skipped to 22 a few weeks ago and had to go back to it last week, and so we're back where we should be now in our study. And I guess while I'm thinking about it, for the ones watching the live or the recording, I apologize. I was supposed to announce on our Facebook page this week that we were going to try to start earlier with our preaching service. Our prayer list has gotten fairly long, and we try to go over it in detail on Wednesday evenings. We've been doing that before the preaching, and it's putting the preaching further and further back. And so we thought we'll do the preaching first and then the prayer list afterwards. And so this is our first time to do it this early, so I'll make that announcement tomorrow morning when I get on, and she's having trouble with the other camera now. Okay. All right, so let's move on with our study. It's the short chapter. There's a little bit to talk about here, not a whole lot. It's kind of self-explanatory. The Lord pretty well explains what he's talking about as far as this this sign of the good and evil figs that he talks about with Jeremiah. He tells this story here, and then spends in verses 1-3, and then spends the rest of the chapter telling Jeremiah what he's talking about. And it's pretty well self-explanatory and a good lesson. It can also be applicable today to a certain extent. Not totally, but to a certain extent. And we'll talk about that when we get to it. So, chapter 24 and verse 1. The Lord showed me, and behold, two baskets of figs were set before the temple of the Lord. After that, Nebuchadrezzar, king of Babylon, had carried away captive Jeconiah, the son of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, and the princes of Judah with the carpenters and smiths from Jerusalem, and had brought them to Babylon. Now, one of the things here I want to point out is, remember we talked a little bit about the king last time, but when Nebuchadrezzar took over Jerusalem, when the siege was over and they came in to the city and took over, and he took captive the royalty of Judah, and many of them were taken back to Babylon itself, and some of that family lived many years there. Some were killed because of who they were. In this case, he takes one of the king's sons back with him. But also notice, he says, the princes of Judah, and the princes are just they're men, young men in most cases, who were members of the royal family, who some may have been over other cities that are close to Jerusalem. If you think of how, the best example I know of, I think most of us can relate to, is the royalty in Europe. And you think about especially England, because they still have theirs to some extent. Members of the royal family were given the title of prince, which is usually the king's sons, kind of kings or queen, whoever's in power, their sons or grandsons. And they're given certain properties or certain cities, in some cases, certain regions of the country to rule over. You see that in England today, with specifically in the news recently. You know, you've seen the Queen's family, her sons and grandsons are still referred to as princes. Now, one of them, just revoked his own how you say it, but his part in the royal family when he married a woman from the U.S. and they were a problem for the family, I guess you could say, and so he was asked to step down from his duties as royalty, and that happens from time to time. It doesn't happen that often, but it does happen, and has happened through history. Now here, also notice in the last part of verse 1, he says, with the carpenters and smiths from Jerusalem. Why? Why the carpenters and the smiths? Jerusalem was known to have the very best carpenters and smiths, and that's metal smiths he's talking about, metal workers, workers in fine arts of metal. Remember, now this would have been a long time before this, just several generations back. Actually, you go back to David and Solomon's day, and those carpenters and smiths were helping build the temple and the king's palaces. They were very good at their art, at their work. And so the king of Babylon recognized this and had these men taken captive and sent back to Babylon to build things for him. So, and these men, I take it as, since he's naming them with the king and the king's family here, I take it these men were probably working for the king himself. These were not just your everyday carpenters. These were men who were in the employ of the king of Judah, and were there to, you know, they had these men who their whole job in life was to take care of the upkeep of the temple and of the palaces, the king's palaces, and whatever else he had for them to do. They were the elite of their group, of their trade. Verse 2, one basket had, and back to, he's going back to these two baskets of figs. And I let me back up there. The two baskets of figs, it says, were set before the temple of the Lord. At the time that Nebuchadnezzar came into Babylon, or came into Jerusalem, a basket of figs was probably a pretty rare thing. Because remember, everything had been destroyed, and what hadn't been destroyed had been carried off by the invading army. The people in Jerusalem itself were had gone through a famine. They had been doing without food because of the siege. In many cases, and I don't know the exact case here, but in many cases, baskets of food would be set before the temple for the poor in their day. These weren't things, these were set aside there sometimes for the poor people, the ones who couldn't buy food. I can't imagine living off of just fig. I guess if that's all you had, you would. But anyway, whether that was what these were there for, or if there was another reason, I don't know. Sometimes people left baskets of food at the temple door or the temple gates for the priest too. It was sometimes that was their tithe, so depends on what it was for. It doesn't really tell us here. But in verse 2, he says, one basket had very good figs, even like the figs that are first ripe. And the other basket had very naughty figs, which could not be eaten. They were so bad. I don't know a whole lot about figs. My grandmother had a fig tree. It didn't do much, so I don't know much about them. I do know, as a matter of fact, unless they're in Fig Newtons, I really don't care for them. That's the only way I can remember eating them out, that I like them. But figs, like any other fruit, when it's first ripe is when it's sweetest. That's when it's best. And that's with any fruit, apples, grapes, oranges, whatever. When it's at its first ripe, that's when it's the sweetest. But he says the other basket had very naughty figs. In other words, they were bad. They were probably on the verge of being rotten, if they weren't already. He says, which could not be eaten. And most fruit, when it goes bad, if you eat it, you're going to get sick. That's what happens. And he says, they could not be eaten. They were so bad. Then said the Lord unto me, what seest thou, Jeremiah? And I said, figs, the good figs, very good, and the evil, very evil, that cannot be eaten, they are so evil. Again, the word of the Lord came unto me, saying, thus saith the Lord, the God of Israel, like these good figs, so will I acknowledge them that are carried away captive of Judah, whom I have sent out of this place into the land of the Chaldeans for their good. For I will set my eyes upon them for good, and I will bring them again to this land, and I will build them and not pull them down, and I will plant them and not pluck them up. And I will give them a heart to know me, that I am the Lord, and they shall be my people, and I will be their God, for they shall return unto me with their whole heart. God's telling of the people who are going to come back after the captivity is over with. Remember, they go through a cleansing period, if you will, during that time, during their captivity. 70 years that they go through, and God purges out the ones. There's the majority of the adults, or maybe all of the adults, die during that time of old age, if nothing else. Remember, they're there for 70 years. So it's only the very young who are still alive and those who were born there in Babylon that will be coming back. But God says back in verse 5, like these good figs, so will I acknowledge them that are carried away captive of Judah. Not just the ones that are carried away, he says, but whom I have sent out of this place. So it's not all of them. There's a remnant that God is going to send out that are the good figs, if you will. They're the ones who are God's elect. And we'll look at the bad ones, the evil figs here in a moment. But the good figs, the ones that God has chosen that are going to come back. And you notice he says in verse 7, and I will give them a heart to know me, that I am the Lord. He's going to save them. They're not going to save themselves. They're not going to, there's no free will involved in that. God says, I'm going to do it. And they shall be my people, and I will be their God. He says back in verse 6, I will set mine eyes upon them for good. In other words, he's going to watch over them. He's going to protect them. Remember the stories of Daniel and the three other young men that were with Daniel, and there were others besides them that he talks about, that the Lord protected. He had a remnant he set aside. There was those that he had a purpose for, and the purpose was that he was going to, once they were ready, once he had prepared them, they were going to come back to the land, and they were going to possess it again, and they did that. He says, and I will build them. I will build them and not pull them down, and I will plant them and not pluck them up. So these that he's talking about here, they're going to return to the land of Judah, to the promised land. Verse 8, and he starts in on the evil figs. And as the evil figs, which cannot be eaten, they are so evil. Surely, thus saith the Lord, so will I give Zedekiah, the king of Judah, and his princes, and the residue of Jerusalem that remain in this land, and them that dwell in the land of Egypt. Now, we haven't talked much about Egypt in this study yet, but Egypt took a lot of people captive also during this time. And we'll get to that part of the study later, but just remember that's why he's mentioning Egypt here. He mentions the king, his princes, and the residue of Jerusalem that remained in this land. There was going to be those who were going to stay behind in Jerusalem. And we'll get into that study a little bit more as we get into this deeper, but there were those who didn't get carried off, and they suffered greatly. They suffered worse in Jerusalem than they did in Babylon because there was no food. The army that was left there by the Babylonians didn't treat them well. They were open to any, because the walls of Jerusalem had been destroyed, they were open to anybody that wanted to come in and attack, and they suffered for it greatly. Verse 9, "And I will deliver them to be removed into all the kingdoms of the earth for their hurt, to be a reproach and a proverb, a taunt and a curse in all places whither I shall drive them. And I will send the sword and the famine and the pestilence among them till they be consumed from off the land that I gave unto them and to their fathers." Remember, I told you that the walls of Jerusalem were destroyed during the siege. And after that, the Babylonians just basically destroyed the majority of the city, the walls of the city. They, by doing so, like I said, they opened Jerusalem up to anybody that wanted to come in. And it happened. Their neighbors, all the nations around them, just flooded in. And anybody that was left, some were taken captive, some were tortured and killed there on the spot. He mentions here in verse 9, he says, "I will deliver them to be removed into all the kingdoms of the earth for their hurt, to be a reproach and a proverb." Remember, we've talked about and we studied the different places that the people at the day on the day of Pentecost were from. Those people were part of the ones who were scattered. Not, you know, either during this time, Jeremiah, what Jeremiah's writing about, or at different times. Anyway, there was different times throughout Israel's history where the people were scattered throughout the known world at that time. And this is a big one here. These people were taken captive by people from other nations and carried away into captivity and made slaves and servants. And he says it's for their hurt to be, and they're going to be a reproach and a proverb, a taunt and a curse in all places whither I shall drive them. And that was true of the Jews that were scattered, whether it was because whether they went into slavery or whether they just carried them off into another land into captivity. They were a scourge in the earth in that day, and were for many generations thereafter. You look at what happened. Seventy plus years ago, right about the time Israel was, Jews were coming back into the nation of Israel, the land of Israel, and reforming the country there, and you see, they came from all parts of the world, from all over the world. They still do, they're trying to go back, but in that day, in the late 1940s. They were coming from all over the world. They were being persecuted in different countries around the world. Even here in our own country, they were being persecuted. We don't think about that much, but it's out there. There's stories out there of it. They went there seeking freedom and seeking to get the promised land back. They were a reproach and he says, a reproach and a proverb and a taunt and a curse in all places. They were that even up until recent times, and in some places still are. So being a Jew, a Hebrew, is not, even in today's world, is not looked upon positively and by many people. Those who are God's elect, those who are that God can still considers his people, you know, we need to, we may not always know who they are, but you know, there are those who, I think we, I don't know if y'all have met any or not, but there are those out there who call themselves Christian Jews. You know, they're Jewish heritage, but they've been saved. And some are even members of some of the Lord's churches. They'll tell you that just because they have a Jewish name, or maybe they have the look about them, their physical features would indicate that they're Jewish. They suffer from time to time. They're persecuted still today. Now, we're going to end there. Next time in chapter 25, we're going to look more into Judah's captivity. Very hard times are coming on the people. And it wasn't easy in the beginning of the captivity. As they settled in and began to get to some kind of normalcy in Babylon, things calmed down some for them. But remember, the reason they were there was because they didn't follow the Lord, because they forsook true worship. They were worshiping after false gods and had turned their back on God. And it was God's chastisement on them. This captivity was his chastisement upon them. And some would live through it. Some would, as he told us tonight in chapter 24, there were going to be some who were going to go back to the land and possess it again. So stay with us during this study. It's getting more and more interesting, if you will. I guess it's been interesting so far, but it's getting more and more so because we're starting to see things and names and places that we've heard of and see what they're about. So we'll stop there for tonight.